One more. Our final case this morning is United States versus Gordon, case number 093797. Ms. Garst.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Hannah Garst. I represent Defendant Appellant Tremaine Gordon. Mr. Gordon submits that the government presented insufficient evidence to convict him of robbery by intimidation because no reasonable person in Maria Soriano or Aubrey Miller's position would feel threatened. The question that we're asking the court to decide is a note enough when the robber has no direct contact with the person intimidated? Is that note alone enough to prove intimidation? This case provides the opportunity for this court to decide where the objective line between intimidating conduct that violates 2113A and statements that fall short of that intimidation for reasons why the listener would not be frightened. Now, this court has defined intimidation as credibly implying that a refusal to comply with the demand for money will be met with force. What the court looks at is, did the robber use words or actions that were calculated to create the impression that any resistance would be met with force? To prove this, the government said that two people were intimidated, first Maria Soriano and second Aubrey Miller. As far as Maria Soriano...
Pause briefly. You describe in your brief Ms. Miller as being a bystander, I believe.
Yes, Your Honor.
She was an employee of the bank, wasn't she?
She is an employee of the bank. What ended up...
Not quite a bystander.
Bystander may be a little bit... I'm not trying to say she's not an employee of the bank. She is an employee of the bank.
A bystander would be somebody who just wandered in or standing around the bank chewing a straw or something, not somebody who's employed by the bank.
Well, I'm referring to her as a bystander in that she was present. She happened to be there when Ms. Jones walked back in order to fill the backpack with the money. I'm not sure Ms. Jones was expecting her to be there, and there was no indication or testimony saying that they were expecting her to be there. So it was more of the fact that she was there at the time when Ms. Jones walked into the back.
What was her reaction, Miller?
Initially, when Ms. Jones walked back, she had the demand note in her right hand.
And what did it say?
The demand note said, "Give me the money from the drawer, also the money from the drive-up area." So as Ms. Jones walked back to the drive-up area itself, she encountered Ms. Miller. She had the note in her right hand and said to Aubrey Miller, "I'm being robbed. What should I do?" Ms. Miller turned and said, "Do whatever he told you to do." Ms. Jones Ms. Miller actually walks back to the area where the Federal Reserve money is and begins filling the backpack.
Miller does this. She's helping Jones.
How long a walk is that?
I believe from the video maybe 8 to 10 feet from the window itself where the cars actually drive up to the back counter. Which I will add, it was completely isolated as far as being able to see Mr. Mitchell, who was at the actual teller counter. There's no evidence that Miller could see Mitchell, that she knew exactly who was the robber at that time.
So the drive-through window is out of, and the vault are both out of sight lines from the teller stations inside the bank where the robber was?
I believe so, Your Honor, because the testimony of Ms. Miller was the only way that she had seen Mr. Mitchell was when she walked in the bank coming back from break, that she saw someone. She didn't know who Mr. Mitchell was until after the robbery had occurred. There was no testimony that she could see Mitchell from where she was. And when I believe it's Government Exhibit 6, which is part of the appeal record, there's no way... You can't really tell, but from that view, from where you see Ms. Jones walk in and you see Ms. Miller standing there, there's no evidence that she could actually see back to the teller booth.
Where are the alarms located in the bank?
I believe they're in the drawers. So, for example, when Ms. Jones pulled out her drawer, there's bait money that's connected to an alarm. If she were to pull the bait money and put it in the bag, the alarm would be set. I believe the same was true in the back. Beyond that, there's nothing in the record that would say that there was an alarm anywhere else in the back. Now, there may be other alarms. I mean, it seems reasonable to believe that there would be other alarms in a teller area, maybe underneath the desk. I don't know. It's not in the record itself. Now, as far as Maria Soriano is concerned, we would submit that there would be no intimidation there because she testified that she didn't even know the robbery was occurring. She only learned about the robbery afterwards. So as far as whether it would be reasonable for her to feel threatened during a robbery that she didn't even know was happening, we think that's pretty far-fetched. Now, the cases that this court has decided have dealt more along the lines with direct contact, where the robber actually had contact with the teller themselves. And in those cases, it makes sense that the teller who is in direct...
Was Ms. Jones charged as a bank robber?
Yes. She was also charged equally.
Then there was contact with the robber. They're working in tandem.
They are working in tandem.
And so one of the two conveys the threat, I'm being robbed.
Well, she conveys the threat to Aubrey Miller.
Right.
I'm being robbed.
Right.
Now, we would suggest that her, by Ms. Jones going back and saying that to Aubrey Miller, she conveys that I'm being robbed, but nothing she does, nothing she says could be seen as intimidation.
Well,
Aubrey Miller wasn't fearful
of
Jones.
Intimidating. Her partner is intimidating, but she's relaying that message.
The problem, Your Honor, that we see is that she's relaying a message, but in that there's a robbery occurring.
Right.
She's not relaying a message of he's threatening to kill me, he's hurting.
You know what a robbery is?
Yes, Your Honor.
It's a threat. It's taking something from somebody by threat of force and violence.
Yes.
So when you say you're being robbed, you're already establishing the fact that there's force and violence involved.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. I don't want you to confess error. I mean, I just want you.
I understand, Your Honor. The line that I'm asking the court to draw is, in the cases, it's really about direct contact. And the accomplice cases that are before the Seventh, or that the Seventh Circuit has decided, there's always been violence, threat of a gun that was going to be used. There's not cases such as this where you have two accomplices working together, one accomplice walks back and plays the victim. I understand, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. There was sufficient evidence in this case for a rational jury to find that the bank robbery was committed by intimidation. Therefore, the defendant's conviction and sentence should be affirmed.
That should take care of the problem.
Okay.
That'll allow.
Well, Your Honor.
I like positive assertions, you know. Like, yeah. There's sufficient evidence here, so quit thinking about it.
Okay. And the reason for that is that although the robber that came into the bank, Mr. Mitchell, did not have any direct contact with...
Supposing somebody stood on a balcony hidden completely with a bullhorn, said either throw the money out in the middle of the store here or I start shooting.
That would be intimidation.
There's no direct contact, is there? You can't see him, you can't hear him. It'd still work, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Is he still charging with bank robbery, if you caught him?
Yes.
Sound idea.
And in this case, in addition to the contact that Emily Jones had with Aubrey Miller, at the time she had contact with her, the testimony was that not only did she show her the note, she also was shaking and appeared scared. So she played her part as the victim of the bank robbery in order to sell the fact that the note meant business. and that if they didn't comply with it, the result would be they'd be met with force. And that's why they turned over the money. And she
so
was
if
actually...
Jones, if Jones is intimidated or looks to be intimidated, she's nervous, shaking, doing all this, and she's being robbed, does that, at least vicariously, pass that on to Miller? Can Miller be recognize somebody else as being intimidated? There she's helping her load up the money?
Yes. And when she was asked the question, if Emily Jones had come back there and simply said, there's all this money from the Federal Reserve sitting here, would you help me load it into a backpack so I can carry it out of the bank? She said, absolutely not. I would not have done that. So, of course,
point
the reason
of that
why
question.
She, pardon me?
What's the point of that question?
Well, the point is that the only reason she complied and helped fill up the backpack with money is because she believed that it was a robbery. And in addition to the fact that the note, or that she believed that there was an individual out at Emily Jones' counter, because when she came back from lunch, she saw that individual. She was also concerned, based on the note statement, all the money from the drive-thru, that there may have been someone outside watching through the window as well.
Yeah, but that's an argument substantially to the effect of, I wouldn't have turned over the money if it hadn't been a real robbery. But we need some evidence rather than just that sort of but-for conclusion. This is a criminal case.
Okay. Well,
So what's the evidence of intimidation?
The evidence is the note that said, give me all the money and all the money through the drive-thru.
No threats.
Well, this court has found previously in other cases that a simple demand for money can be sufficient to show intimidation. And in this case, it said, give me all the money through the drive-thru, and the money in the drive-thru. In addition, the fact that Emily Jones...
Your strong point is she said, I'm being robbed. And
correct.
Robbery has a very particular connotation. That is, it's force and intimidation.
I agree, Your Honor. And
I knew you would.
Well, what I'm looking at is this... Jones is the one who's apparently shook up. She's the one that's nervous, being robbed, and it's at her teller window, whatever. She's being robbed. That's what she tells Miller. And what I'm trying to look at here, maybe, you know, as I just said before, she's the one who had the direct contact. Miller knows that. And Miller is helping her load up this money from the Federal Reserve, which I understand is a lot of money, over $100,000, as I recall, right? A lot of money.
This is
not nickel-dime stuff. So something big's going on. And I'm trying to see that Miller sees Jones as being valid as opposed to faking it, that she's really nervous. Maybe she is really nervous that this thing isn't going to come off. She may be nervous for another reason. But apparently she's nervous because she's being robbed. She may be nervous because she's got this scheme cooked up and she's afraid it's not going to work or something.
Well,
I mean, intimidation is, I think, at least contagious. Maybe not. I'm trying to tie it together.
And I think from the testimony of Miller, it was contagious. She said based on Emily Jones' reaction, her demeanor when she came back there, the fact that she was shaking, the fact that she said she was being robbed, the note.
Did Jones plead not guilty or guilty?
She pled guilty, and she actually cooperated and testified.
She testified against the defendant?
Yes. And also coupled with the fact that Miller knew when she came back from her break that there was an individual in the lobby. So it wasn't that she didn't know that there was anyone else in the bank or someone that had presented the note, so she had reason to believe Jones when she came in there and said that she was being robbed.
Well, was there anything that she took note of about that individual that raised a suspicion?
Not at the time when she came back from her break. She saw him from the back, I believe.
So she knew the bank wasn't empty?
Right.
Okay.
She knew that there was a customer, I believe, at Emily Jones's window or near there.
That doesn't go very far to establish intimidation.
Well, that's just one of the factors. It goes to establish the fact that there was someone in the bank, that Miller knew there was someone in the bank, that could corroborate the fact that Jones came back there and said, I've got a note in a backpack. If Miller had come back and known there was no one in the bank.
It's clear that she can't see him from the drive-through window?
There was no evidence that she could see. The only evidence of her seeing the individual out there was that she said when she came back from her break, she saw him. I believe there was a wall that separated that area. There was a doorway, but where she was positioned, she couldn't see.
I thought Miller said something about when she came back in the bank, she saw this person. It caught her attention. Not necessarily the robber or whatever, but somebody who she wouldn't remember for no reason. Now, I thought I read that somewhere in all this stuff. Am I wrong? Didn't Miller say something about this when she testified that she knew someone was in the bank, that he's caught her attention? She didn't think it was a robber necessarily, but it was somebody that, assuming when she got back there with Jones, she thinks it's the guy that she remembers seeing.
I believe she may have testified to something to that effect, that they knew most of the customers and he may not have been a customer that she recognized or something to that effect.
All right.
She didn't understand that it was a robber.
You know the record. I don't. So.
Right. She didn't understand. She did not know at the time that it was a robbery.
No, she didn't know that.
But he did. She did take note of him when she went back to the drive-thru.
The proof of the intimidation really boils down to the demand note and Jones's demeanor.
Correct.
And her statement she was being robbed.
Right. And her demeanor and her statement. And it's our position that based on that evidence, in the light most favorable to the government, which is the standard here, that a rational jury correctly concluded that the defendant was guilty of bank robbery by intimidation, and that the conviction and judgment should be affirmed. And if there's no further questions, I'll end my argument. Thank you.
All right, Ms. Garst, how much time? You have 2 minutes.
Your Honor, we're not contesting that it was a robbery. We're contesting the intimidation. Like, clearly a robbery occurred. It was a large robbery of $122,000. The problem, as Your Honor has noted, is the intimidation. And Judge Mannion, I would say...
That's what makes the difference between a theft and a robbery.
Exactly. The government could have charged her with 2113B, which didn't require the intimidation, but they chose Section A, which required them to prove intimidation. And there's no published cases that I've come in contact with, nor does the government cited, that talks about intimidation of this kind, this indirect intimidation. As Ms. Jones walked back, she was nervous. She was shaking. She had a note in her hand.
If you take the position that Ms. Jones is a robber herself, and that's the position that was taken, and the record bears it out, she even pleaded guilty to that count, then she was a robber who was intimidating by saying, I'm being robbed, and which puts the lady in danger herself, the biller.
We're not contesting that she was not a robber. Okay. We're contesting the intimidation. There's no further questions. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.